Warfare Show, starring Jim Baska. Maybe your mother told you never talk politics and religion in polite company. Well, Jim Baska's mother never told him that. So come on, enjoy the forbidden pleasure. You can participate in the conversation at 1-800-259-9231. Today's show is sponsored by Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org. And now, here's Jim.
Welcome to the Culture Repair Show. I am your host, Jim Babka. 1-800-259-9231. I'm giving out the number right here at the beginning, 1-800-259-9231. But I got to be honest with you. I got like seven or eight things sitting here in front of me. And I know from experience that I'm going to have a lot to say about a few of these things, and we're not going to get all of them done. And so because of that, I really don't care if you call today. You can just sit back and you can listen, because, and at least one thing, I'm going to give you a very important lesson that most people don't understand. And their lack of understanding has led us to the situation we are today, where incumbents are elected over and over and over again, and people stand back and say, how come the challengers never win? I'm going to answer that question for you today, and I'm going to bring it home to my home state, Ohio, to do that, where we've got some issues on the statewide ballot that are making national news. And we're going to get to that in just a few moments. We've got the president making his statement on avian flu and what they're going to do to fight the bird flu. I hope to have some time to get into that. Of course, we will have a GOA update. There's some gun confiscation issues in New Orleans we want to talk about there. And we also want to talk about the budget. I don't want to leave the budget go, because there's a David Walker, who is the Comptroller General of the United States, has kind of laid out just how serious, just how bad our nation's financial state is. And folks, I got to be honest with you, if you depress easily, you're not going to want to listen to that segment. You're just going to want to turn it off, because the news is worse than you can imagine when it comes to how Congress is handling the money, how the president is guiding them to spend the money. And so we're going to talk about that, and I definitely want to make plenty of time to discuss that, because this column that was put up by Knight Ridder Newspapers is just so good, I almost want to read it for you word for word. Now, there's a couple things that they suggested that I don't support, but that really got to the brass tacks of just how much money is being spent and where the serious problems lie for the country. And so we're going to want to have some time to get into that. And this came in, and I just missed it. I just missed this. I found this out after I got off the air last week and didn't have the opportunity to share it with you. A setback in Bush's war on liberty. The ACLU press release stated the following. This is now going back about 10 days ago now. Late this afternoon, Judge Perry A. Little of the 13th Judicial Circuit in Hillsborough County stopped the suspicionless pat-down searches of all persons entering Raymond James Stadium for National Football League games. The ruling comes in the first legal challenge to a controversial policy the NFL has sought to impose on stadiums across the country, many of which, by the way, are municipally owned. Judge Little issued the preliminary injunction to stop the searches. While a legal challenge by the American Civil Liberties Union of Florida goes forward, the ACLU brought the lawsuit on behalf of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, season ticket holder Gordon Johnston, a high school civics teacher. Now, the truthaboveall.blogspot.com gave me this report. It's one of the blogs I read, truthaboveall.blogspot.com, and they go on to comment, George Bush's war against liberty, commonly referred to as the war against terror, has suffered a great setback today, and hopefully America will soon wake up to the reality that absolute security cannot be provided by the government. Further, I hope that the people will begin to recognize that trading liberty for presumptions of security directly contradicts the moral compass of our republic and our Constitution. And I shared that thought. I believe this is a setback for those that want to set up a police state and search and seize us at every turn. And so I welcome this as good news and hope it is a harbinger of things to come, because this is just an injunction. This isn't a settled decision, but it clearly is a step in the right direction. Well, 1-800-259-9231 is the number you can call to get in on the show and to comment today, or you can email me at comments, plural, at downsizeddc.org. Is the sequel here for All the President's Men? I mean, I think I want to start asking the question regularly. I don't know if I'll do it or not, but it just delights me to ask this question. What did Vice President Cheney know, and when did he know it? Leon Hayter, writing for LouRockwell.com, has made the case that there are a lot of parallels between this situation with the Scooter Libby indictment and the Nixon White House. Targeting of those on the president's enemy list who violated a law that came to light. They were doing this because they were worried. They were trying to target opponents, political opponents, to a war in Asia. And of course, if you know that the plumbers, the White House operatives that did the break-in for the Democratic Party in the Watergate building in Washington, D.C., weren't the reason that the President Nixon had to resign. Ultimately, what brought his presidency down was the cover-ups and scandals that followed. And there were constitutional questions at stake in that situation. Well, you know, this Hayter compares Joseph Wilson in the current saga to Daniel Ellsberg of the Nixon era. And just kind of reminds us that there are parallels here. Now, a lot of people, are excited that this indictment has come down. They see this as a chance to score. You know, Chuck Schumer was standing next to the Senate Minority Leader during a press conference while this was being talked about, and he looked like he'd just swallowed the cat. He was just gleeful. And I got to be honest with you, maybe this will work out the way Mr. Hayter is suggesting, that it will begin to we'll begin to find out what really happened here. Because it's my suspicion that potentially a crime was committed here, and that if it was, it was at a very high level. And that Scooter Libby was the expendable party. Yeah, Alex Jones has talked about this here on the GCN network in some detail. But I had a conversation this week, an interesting conversation, with a attorney who has been around Washington, D.C. now for over 30 years. And he was saying that under special prosecutor-type laws, you know, the old phrase about being able to indict a ham sandwich is even more so true. In fact, he quoted a scene, he reminded me of a scene from the show The West Wing, which I watch, by the way. And on this, there's a special prosecutor character who comes into one of the president's assistants. The assistant's name happens to be Charlie, if you watch the show. And he says to him, he says, what they're going to do is they're going to call you in and they're going to question you. They're going to ask you to recall things going back 2 and 3 years in great detail. They're going to spend a lot of time. They're going to grill you thoroughly. And then they're going to wait about 6 weeks. They're going to call you in again. They're going to ask you the same questions, phrased slightly differently. And if they find a single inconsistency between the two accounts, they will indict you. Now, a lot of people who have never been through this experience before have no idea what it means to try to remember all the details there. Was there really a crime committed? Now, that is the latest GOP spin, by the way. They want to say there's no crime committed. And I'm just not willing to accept that as just a, you know, carte blanche thing. You know, maybe the indictment here against Scooter Libby is cheap. Potentially it is cheap. And the special prosecutor had to indict him to get his points, to make sure that he's not reviled. Any indictment, got to get an indictment to show that he justifies his existence and what he did. But the idea that there was no crime committed here, there was enough of something that a special prosecutor was impaneled in the first place. And if you look at this law, there was a real heavy burden here in terms of intent. It's almost impossible to prove. You have to demonstrate, for example, that when Scooter Libby leaked this information, he knew that he was violating the law, that he had the intent to reveal this agent's name for some political gain. How do you get inside someone's head and figure those things out? That's really, really difficult. So, you know, when we come back from the break, we'll pick this up. 1-800-259-9231 or email me at comments@downsizedc.org. Imagine you're on trial. The charge against you? Violating one of the hundreds of laws Congress passes each year. You rise in your defense and say, Your Honor, I didn't know about this law. How will the judge respond? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I think you know the answer. The judge will reply, ignorance of the law is no excuse. So what's the excuse for your representatives in Congress? Their ignorance is even worse. They don't even read many of the laws they pass. At DownsizedDC.org, we're proposing a simple but powerful idea, the Read the Bills Act, to force Congress to read the laws they pass. Why? Because we believe the federal government is way too big. We want to slow the politicians down. We want to reduce the size and power of the federal government, and we want them to sweat the details, just like you do. Check out DownsizeDC.org, because ignorance is no excuse, even for a congressman.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Before we get back into the topic we were discussing about the Scooter Libby indictment, I want to let you know that, first of all, the phone number is 1-800-259-9231, or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org. And I will not be here live next weekend, but I still will be here. I still will be doing my duty and keeping you informed of what's going on. And I'm going to be joined by a very special guest, the president of this network, the Genesis Communications Network. Ted Anderson will be joining me. We will be talking. We'll talk about a variety of things, but we're going to have a special focus on gold. You hear the commercials for Midas Resources here on the network. Midas, you know, markets gold and, as an investment, and gold is taking off. And Ted wants to talk about gold and why now is the time to invest in it. And so I'm really pleased to be joining him. And boy, I wish we were doing this live. He agreed to do a taped program, and that's good, because I'm going to be in Illinois next weekend giving a speech at the Libertarian Party of Illinois convention in Springfield, Illinois, at the Holiday Inn there. I will be giving a speech on Sunday, and I'll actually be on a plane during the time that this show is airing next weekend. But I wish we were having him on live, because I'd love to have one of my listeners call in and say, Ted, how come Jim Babka doesn't have 2 hours or more? And so that would be a lot of fun. I always feel when I come in here, you know, I have to be honest, I've been doing this for about 8 months now, and when I first started, I didn't know how I was going to fill an hour, and now that I've been doing this, I don't know how to keep things inside an hour. And maybe I'm just saying too much. Well, let's go back here. You know, I think the intent here was clear. I think with the Scooter Libby situation, the intent was clear that they were looking to get even with former Ambassador Joe Wilson, who was going to come back and report that there was no there on the aluminum tubes relating to the production of highly enriched uranium necessary for the creation of weapons of mass destruction that did not exist in Iraq. They knew this, and they began making moves, and there's evidence, by the way, that Scooter Libby was giving this information out now, even earlier than many of us realized, almost like he was shopping it. And you have the ever limber Limbaugh and other hosts, you know, talking about how this is different. This is a different type of thing. There's no real crime committed here. This is a technicality. And trying to explain that, yes, they take the lying and obstruction of justice seriously, but that anybody's trying to dig deeper and try to see if there is, you know, some kind of deeper lie. And, that the president has, as Rush Limbaugh put it, has somehow or other lied us into war. Well, it's not somehow or other. He has lied us into war. And I, you know what? I'm going to do a war update here today, and we're going to give you two more items closely related to Ambassador Wilson to prove the point. So, John Harmon, hit the war update. If I was being completely Limbaugh-esque today, I would have started off that update with a duddle-up, duddle-up, duddle-up. Well, whatever. Here, I'm going to give you two lies today closely related to this topic. Number one, this is a Bush lie. I got this from Steve Perry, by the way, over at citypages.com. The CIA was primarily responsible for any pre-war intelligence errors or distortions regarding Iraq. Perry goes on to write, don't be misled by the news that CIA Director George Tenet has taken the fall for Bush's falsehoods in the State of the Uranium address. As the journalist Robert Dreyfus wrote shortly before the war, quote, even as it prepares for the war against Iraq, the Pentagon is already engaged on a second front, its war against the Central Intelligence Agency. The Pentagon is bringing relentless pressure to bear on the agency to produce intelligence reports more supportive of the war with Iraq. Morale inside the U.S. national security apparatus is said to be low, with career staffers feeling intimidated and pressured to justify the push for war. End of quote. In short, Tenet fell on his sword when he vetted Bush's State of the Union yarns, and now he has had to get up and fall on it again. Let me give you another lie. An International Atomic Energy Agency report indicated that Iraq could be as little as 6 months away from making nuclear weapons. But that claim had to be retracted when the IAEA pointed out that no such report existed. Both of these things have been advanced by conservative talk show hosts, and now the latest spin is that this doesn't go anywhere, that the fact that there was some low-level prosecution about lying means that no real crime has committed. I've already explained to you that the standards for this particular statute are incredibly high, and don't think that Bush and that Cheney and that Scooter Libby and Karl Rove didn't know that. And so these talk show hosts defending this activity, taking up their sides, you know, it's red versus blue. There's a lesson here in this, and that is that political parties destroy personal ethics. You begin to forget what it is you stand for because you don't really stand for anything. You only stand for your team. You no longer have a moral compass. And I want this to be a lesson. I want, as you're looking, if you're a young person listening right now and you're thinking about going into politics or a life of crime, but then again, I repeat myself, if you're thinking about choosing this kind of career, you need to take a lesson from this situation. If you are the top of the heap, if you are the boss, if you are the president of the United States, then you have to be concerned that if you give out, that if you coordinate a conspiracy like this, that someone's going to roll over and give state's evidence on you. But chances are, nobody listening to me right now is going to be in that position, but maybe you would be in a position where you would be able to participate in this as one of the lower level guys, one of the guys carrying out the act, like Scooter Libby did. Here was a chief of staff to the most powerful vice president of the United States in our lifetime, probably ever. And as soon as the chips were down, as soon as the scandal began to break, he's the one that gets thrown overboard. He's the one that's got to pay the price. Karl Rove doesn't get indicted. Dick Cheney doesn't get indicted. Nobody else gets indicted, just Scooter Libby. And the idea is to give plausible deniability. The Republicans can turn around now and say, well, there's been no real accusation of a crime by the president or the vice president, and they haven't proven that he lied, and they haven't proven this, and they haven't proven that. And this is just technicalities. And, oh, of course, Scooter should go to jail. Well, of course, Scooter was expendable. But apparently, Karl Rove was not. You know, though, in the political arena, Bush is being found guilty. The court of public opinion is finding Bush guilty. His poll numbers this week have been announced. Once again, they have plummeted to a new all-time low. And frankly, I don't think he could get his poll numbers any lower if he stripped naked and ran out into the Rose Garden in front of the media. I don't think his numbers could go any lower. I think he's pretty close to bottomed out right now. Now, what will be interesting is if he begins to be the pariah in his party, kind of like Clinton was in the 1998 elections, where people are literally saying, don't come campaign for me, or as Al Gore famously didn't have Clinton campaigning for him. They wanted to keep their distance. If that happens to this president, his hubris will really have come back to bite him. He won't have effective ability to govern because his own party will be ducking him. This is the Culture Repair Show, 1-800-259-9231. Get you on to talk to me, Jim Babka. A congressman recently revealed that legislation totaling 2,900 pages and involving more than $1 trillion was available to members of Congress for less than 48 hours to study and consider. That's over 60 pages of legislation per hour. Do you think anyone read the entire bill? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Consider a proposal buried in a 3,200-page, $388 billion bill, which would have empowered committee chairmen or their agents to examine Americans' tax returns. When this horrible provision came to light, no one claimed to know how it got into the bill. One congressman questioned said, "I didn't write it. I didn't approve it. I wasn't even consulted." If your attorney represented you this way, he might be disbarred. But this is how Congress represents you every day. That's why DownsizeDC.org has created the Read the Bills Act. You can force Congress to read their bills before they pass them at DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
This is the Culture Repair Show, 1-800-259-9231, or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org. And we use the downsizedc.org address because I happen to be the president of downsizedc.org and also the Downsized DC Foundation, and its website is downsizedc.com. We're going to get to a GOA update in just a moment, but I want to talk about something that's going on in my home state of Ohio, which is making national news. There's a lot of people that think that Ohio is somehow or other corrupt or more corrupt than elsewhere in the country, and that the results of the last two elections have somehow or other demonstrated that Republicans know how to steal an election. Well, as you know, on this show, I'm no big fan of Republicans, and I'm sure they are capable of doing such things, but it didn't happen here. That is not what happened here. There's been recounts, there's been all kinds of inquiries and stuff. There are serious problems, and the Secretary of State, Ken Blackwell, is a partisan hack of the highest order. That's my take on the issue. I've been able to observe it here. I've been able to see things. I'm aware of things that most people aren't aware of that have gone on in this state. And so I would say that without reservation, that he clearly tries to do whatever he can to advantage his own party, even in his office. I believe that. That's my belief. I'm entitled to my belief, Mr. Blackwell. So, you know, if you got a problem with that, that's the way I see it. And I'll be happy to lay out the evidence if I need to do so. But we have statewide issues on the ballot, issues 2, 3, 4, and 5. And it was interesting, it made the front page of our paper that Governor Schwarzenegger is supporting issue 4. Governor Schwarzenegger is even going to record radio spots for issue 4. Now, I thought this was interesting because Governor Schwarzenegger is the governor of California. It's a state that's pretty far from Ohio. And in fact, most Ohioans kind of think that people in California are a little loopy or crazy. That's a place far off on the left coast. Definitely not the heartland. I wish that Governor Schwarzenegger would stay home because I think these issues are bad or worse. They fit in one of those two categories. None of these are really good ideas. Although one of them does seem to be on the surface. Issue 2 would allow anyone for any reason to vote absentee beginning 35 days before the election. Currently, voters must give a reason. Now, this runs under the old rubric that somehow or other we'd be better off if everybody voted. And I don't believe that's true in the least. I've seen how people voted, and quite frankly, I don't think most people should be able to vote. Okay? That's a shocking thing to say, but there are a lot of people that are stepping in those polls that are really stupid. The idea that we would give them 35 extra days to get their stuff together, they can't make it on election day, is just bizarre to me. That's issue 2. It's almost certainly going to pass. The State House and Senate has already worked to put together a bill that works better because there are some flaws with issue 2. We won't dwell on it. Issue 4, the one that I'm skipping 3 for a purpose. We're going to come back to it. Issue 4, the one that Arnold Schwarzenegger is endorsing, is a ballot issue that would change how they do redistricting here. It's an anti-gerrymandering proposal, and it's designed to make competitiveness in the districts the most important factor in determining how the districts are laid out. They have a complicated formula that they follow. The problem with this proposal, on the surface, it sounds very good to me. I got to be honest. But the problem with this proposal is that they didn't really take the rules don't take into account geographic areas, and you could have districts that go back to the old gerrymander that stretch all the way across the state. For those of you that are We'll say from Dayton to Toledo. Now, for those of you who are geographically impaired, that would be from the southwest portion of the state all the way to the northwest portion of the state. And Ohio's not a small state. It's big enough that that's a pretty big tract of land. You're talking about maybe a 2.5-hour drive there. And so, you know, you'd be talking about these strangely shaped, very long congressional districts. And that's probably not a good idea. So there's some, and the other problem is that this is written, and all these things are going to be written in the state constitution. So if there's any damage done by them, getting it out is going to require another round of statewide ballot initiatives or amendments to our constitution. Issue 5 is a constitutional amendment to replace the Secretary of State, who, as I said earlier, I believe is a political hack, with an appointed board. Now, the problem is this Secretary of State will soon be out of office. And I don't, you know, we'll see what happens with the next one, but are the people going to be better off with an unelected board of bureaucrats making this decision than they are with somebody elected that they can hold accountable for the decisions that he handles and makes? So the idea that, you know, that the Secretary of State office should somehow or other, and by the way, they're not eliminating the Secretary of State office, will continue to have the office, it'll continue to have the bureaucracy, and he'll continue to get a payroll. But it's issue 3 that I really want to focus the most on here. Many of you wonder why Congress gets reelected at 98% rates. Well, I'm going to tell you today. Issue 3 here in Ohio is going to make it part of our state constitution. It's going to make these numbers fixed in stone that contributions are limited to 1,000 for state rep candidates and 2,000 for statewide candidates. Now, some people are going to say, that's a great idea. That gets money out of politics. Well, no, it doesn't. First of all, even the Supreme Court recognized that in the area of campaign finance, that there is what's called the hydraulic principle. In a hydraulic cylinder, if there is a crack in the cylinder, the water will seep out. And there are always cracks. And when government is handing out favors, there will always be people looking to spend their money to buy access to the office. That is just going to be a given. But what they will do, if they can't give it directly to the party or they can't give it directly to the candidate, they will find other outlets or means of doing it. Now, this favors two groups. It favors incumbents, and it favors multimillionaires, because multimillionaires, thanks to the Constitution, cannot be limited in how much they spend on their own campaigns. They're allowed to give themselves as much as they want, their campaigns, as much as they want, because theoretically they can't buy their own influence. Okay? So they have a First Amendment right. If you are a challenger, when contributions are limited, the game becomes raising more of them. Easy for an incumbent, but if you're a challenger, it becomes akin to filling up a swimming pool with a teaspoon. Good challengers stay out of the race knowing how difficult it's going to be to raise the money, and poor candidates just can't do it. The incumbent, on the other hand, has an easy time doing it. All he does is say, I'm going to hold a banquet. And it's kind of like a protection racket. I mean, that's the way I want you to think about this, because it's really how it works. These business interests, these special interests, have need to have access. They need to protect their industry. They may even be seeking special favors. And in order to curry that favor, in order to build those relationships, they make contributions. And they do it in groups, in clusters. The incumbent will announce that he's going to hold a fundraising banquet, and the special interest will buy a table or two tables. So that means a stack of checks at the limit. And everyone involved knows that they need to write to the limit because they want to keep their industry going. They want to protect their industry from the harm that the government can do them, or they want to get some kind of contract or special favor. And so what ends up happening is because these contributions are limited, the challenger doesn't have that same access to sell, doesn't have the same protection racket scheme, doesn't have the perks and benefits of office, and he can't raise the money. Consequently, the media doesn't cover him or give him the kind of coverage that he needs. Consequently, people don't take his campaign seriously. Consequently, he doesn't get the message out because he can't raise the money. And consequently, he goes down to defeat. This is what is happening at the congressional level. The idea that it should come to your state is a bad idea. I'm going to be voting no on all of these issues, 2, 3, 4, and 5, this coming Tuesday. I'll be back.
If you're an internet political activist, pay close attention.
The Federal Election Commission, FEC for short, is about to make your life difficult. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Last September, a federal judge ruled, quote, to permit an entire class of political communications to be unregulated would permit an evasion of campaign finance laws. That means if you forward a campaign press release using an email list, post a campaign ad on your blog, or link to a candidate's website from your homepage, then you may well be required to register with the government and file complicated reports. You'll probably need a lawyer, too. And what the FEC won't tell you is that none of these rules will apply to MSNBC or the New York Times website. This shouldn't happen in America. You have First Amendment rights. Visit DownsizeDC.org to free the Internet. A one-sentence law can stop this unconstitutional insanity. That's DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Minutes until the top of the hour, second to last segment of the Culture Repair Show. I'm your host, Jim Babka. Last chance to get in on the phone calls to 1-800-259-9231, or you can email me at downsizedc.org. But I got to tell you, I am on track right now to get everything done I wanted to get done in this show, and I am amazed. Let's see if I can actually pull it off. I have been trying to sound the alarm here about our budget woes, about what's going on, about how much money is being spent by the federal government, how the Bush administration is out of control. And another report from the Knight Ridder newspapers written by Kevin G. Hall says that the situation is even worse. I'm going to advise you, if you are on depressant medication, if you are easily depressed and borderline suicidal, do not listen to this next segment. Turn off your radio for the next 5.5 minutes or so and come back and listen to the end of the show, because what I'm about to share with you is bad news, and it's bad news for all of us. Over the next week, Congress is likely to trim federal spending and insist with a straight face that it's getting government spending under control, but it's not. David Walker, the nation's comptroller general, should know. He said the facts are not partisan or ideological, and the problem with America's fiscal future is worse than advertised. Now, the White House and Congress are pledging to trim $35 billion to $50 billion in spending over the next 5 years. But, folks, we need to keep in mind that there is a $2.5 trillion budget here, and that's less than one-half of 1% of the money that the government, or the annual budget for the federal government. By the way, this Walker came up last year, and I think this guy's somewhat heroic. He isn't afraid to say exactly how bad things are. I doubt his boss is really careful what he's doing. But there's a whole bunch going on. This is just the tip of the iceberg. The real problem, according to this account, is government's unfunded liabilities. What the government already owes or has promised to its citizens are growing at staggering rates. Unfunded liabilities include everything from public debt to promise Medicare and Social Security benefits. In 2000, they totaled $20.4 trillion. By 2004, after President Bush and Congress increased spending, they reached $43.3 trillion. Now, this account also includes the fact that there were tax cuts, but folks, tax increases are not the solution here. The federal government takes too much of your money and spends it recklessly, and you should not have to pay for their irresponsibility. Unfortunately, you're gonna, and your children are gonna. When the government next reports come out this December 15th, the total is expected to reach as much as potentially $50 trillion for these unfunded liabilities. Now, just how much money is $50 trillion? And here's the most depressing part of this. That's $166,000 for each of almost 300 million Americans. Now, you can take that $166,000 and multiply it times the number of people that live in your home right now. You have this problem. Your parents have this problem. Your children have this problem. Your grandchildren have this problem. Your cousins, your neighbors, your aunts, your uncles, everyone you know is strapped with $166,000 debt to cover the unfunded liabilities. Now, folks, there's only a couple of ways that they can make up this money. They can raise your taxes. They can slash the benefits at a moment that you most need it, that you've been counting on it. You've been paying into the system all this time. They could slash them, take them from you. Or they can keep printing the funny money. And they've already been printing the funny money. They can sell debt overseas. But folks, we're being set up for a collapse. We're being set up for imminent danger here because sooner or later the piper's going to need to be paid. You see, people will say, well, what's the big deal if we have this big deficit? You know, they'll take the Keynesian economic approach and say, we just owe that money to ourselves. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is sooner or later it's going to need to be turned into cash to pay the liability. And at the point that that happens, it ain't going to be there. And so they can print in currency, which is inflation-inducing, or, and I'm potentially hyperinflation-inducing. I mean, you got upset, for example, that the cost of your fuel just went up here recently. Wait till the cost of everything goes up like that, because government printed so much money to pay for its unfunded liabilities. And your fixed income purchasing power, Social Security recipients, is gone. Now, the government's taking on this debt. 46% of our debt right now is held by foreigners, especially the governments of Japan and China. The net national debt, the amount that must be financed by borrowing in capital markets, which affects our interest rates and our economy, is a mind-boggling $4.6 trillion. Alan Greenspan said, unless the situation is reversed at some point, these budget trends will cause serious economic disruptions. I just got through explaining to you a couple possible ways that could happen. And they're doing some incredible bad things. I mean, they've got this highway bill that they passed that had a bridge to nowhere. That, you know, I talked about this on the show, $24 billion worth of earmarks. This Medicare prescription drug benefit, which we were told was going to cost $450 billion when they passed it 2 years ago. And we're now learning it's going to cost $700 billion over 10 years. Nobody's going to go to jail. Martha Stewart can lie to these investigators, she goes to jail, nobody's going to, Enron, all this other stuff, but nobody's going to go to jail for lying about how much money the government was going to spend. Anyway, I digress. So here are some potential solutions, and we'll get into these and bring it and come back on the break on the other side with a couple more, potentially. Repeal the Medicare prescription drug benefit. The savings here would be $300 billion over 5 years, $700 billion over 10 years. Repeal the earmarks I just spoke of, the dubious pork projects inserted by lawmakers from the recently passed highway bill, including the bridge to nowhere that we talked about in Alaska, $24 billion to be saved. I'll give you a couple more saving items when we come back, and we have our GOA update. Gun Owners, of course, is the sponsor of the show. We'll get back to those two things in the final segment of the Culture Repair Show. Several days after the Patriot Act was passed, a printed version was made available for Congress to read. Yes, I said several days after the Patriot Act was passed. But that's not unusual. Congress routinely passes bills that has little or no time to read. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I say it's time for a new American revolution with the slogan, No Legislation Without Representation. Congress cannot claim to be representing us when they don't know what's in the bills they pass. They shouldn't take the words of lobbyists. They shouldn't rely on unelected staff. And they shouldn't take orders from the party leadership because, after all, they're supposed to represent you. At DownsizedDC.org, you'll find a bill that should be the law of the land. It's called the Read the Bills Act. You can read it at our website, DownsizedDC.org. Better yet, you can use our simple system to tell your elected representatives to sponsor the Read the Bills Act. Write it down, DownsizedDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Final segment of the Culture Repair Show. I'll come back to these cuts that could end the deficits if I have time. This is a very short segment, and I want to make sure that I get in the gun GOA update because Gun Owners of America, www.gunowners.org, is a sponsor of the show, and this is the GOA update. Larry says, you no doubt remember the shocking video, law-abiding citizens having their guns stolen, not by looters or hoodlums, but by officials acting under color of law. You'll want to grab a pen. I'm going to give you a web link here. Many of you saw it here first. GOA posted several videos at gunowners.org/notb.htm to document the gun confiscation that was taking place in New Orleans in September. It was hard to believe that this was happening in our own country. American troops were going house to house, smashing through doors and taking firearms. One would have thought it was videotaped from Cuba or Cambodia, not from the state of Louisiana. But what was happening since then? Well, the U.S. District Court of the Eastern District in Louisiana issued a restraining order to stop authorities from confiscating firearms on September 23. So now, what happens to those corrupt officials who were stealing firearms? Will they be held accountable? Or will every guilty official simply receive the equivalent of a hand slap? To this end, GOA sent a letter to U.S. Inspector General Fine asking last month to request action. The letter cites newspaper articles and TV news broadcasts to demonstrate that National Guard troops, police, and U.S. Marshals were confiscating firearms in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. The letter also reminds General Fine that the U.S. District Court in Louisiana put a stop to this illegal taking on September 23. In light of this overwhelming evidence, GOA urged General Fine to investigate who are the guilty parties who need to be held accountable for perpetrating these harmful acts against innocent Americans. General Fine has the authority to investigate the criminal acts of federal officials and to refer them for prosecution. And GOA sent a similar letter to the Attorney General of Louisiana requesting that he bring charges against state-level officials who were stealing firearms from citizens in the Big Easy. Now, you can view these letters at the very same link I just gave out to you, gunowners.org/notb.htm on the GOA website. So far, it appears that General Fine has been dragging his feet on this request, which is why he may need to fear from folks all across the country. There's an action item here. GOA provides this. If you go and you to GOA site, the very first action alert up on the page at this very moment. More work needed to investigate the gun confiscations in New Orleans. And you can go and check this alert out. It's part two of the alert. Part one has to do with their comments on the selection of Samuel Alito to be a Supreme Court justice. But they have a letter there that you can send and an activist link and a way to do that. And that is at the website gunowners.org. Gun owners, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. I encourage you to check them out and to join them. Well, here's some more of these cuts. Cut annual subsidies to farmers. Save $12 to $30 billion annually. Shave one-third of one percentage point off the cost of living adjustment of Social Security benefits. Cut business subsidies, saving $138 billion over 10 years. Cancel new Navy destroyer and littoral combat ship programs and buy frigates instead. $28.8 billion saved over 10 years. Folks, the point is, we've gone through the list before. Almost all of the spending that the federal government does is unconstitutional. There's plenty of places to cut a $2.5 trillion budget for real. You can learn more about how to do this at downsizedc.org. And remember, next week we're having Ted Anderson on the show on a recorded show. I hope you'll turn in and learn about gold. Bye-bye.